Yes, marriage and divorce, marriage and divorce. And I think what I want to do is I want to remind us, I want to start here. I want to remind us of kind of what I would say is a key player, so to speak, in the book of Mark. And we're going to talk about this guy kind of at the beginning here. His name's Herod Antipas, right? And before we talk about this Herod, sometimes this gets a little confusing in the Bible, is there's two Herods, right? So there's Herod the Great, right? And Herod the Great lives from about 72 BC till about... Okay, this is where the dates get a little confusing, and I kind of mess this up. He lives till about 4 BC, right? But again, the way that Jesus' birth is what they've thought about, it gets a little confusing in there on how they do all this specific dating. But Herod the Great is known for the second temple construction, right? So think about in the days of King David, and then David has a son, Solomon. They build the temple, right? That temple gets destroyed during the exile, right? As the Jews are kind of exiled by Babylon and Assyria. And then you have Herod the Great kind of builds that second temple. It's the temple that you still see, or parts of that temple we still see in Jerusalem today, right? And then again, Herod gets introduced as kind of early on in the Jesus story. Remember when the wise men go to Herod and they say, hey, we're looking for this new king of the Jews. And Herod's like, hey, tell me where he might be that I will go and worship him, right? And then they realize like, hey, he's not really wanting to worship Jesus. He's wanting to kill this potential threat. So the wise men go away. Herod decides to kill all the boys under 2 years old. You guys remember this kind of in the Christmas, kind of, you know, kills all the boys around Jesus's birth. So again, the dating, the exact dating on him gets a little bit tricky to understand, but he was kind of from about 72 BC to about 4 BC. He has like four children, more or less, right? And after he dies, his kingdom, this kingdom, is divided, okay? And it kind of looks a little bit like this. And I know that this is hard to see down here, but you have these two little pockets here, and these two little pockets are given to his daughter. Her name is Salome, and she kind of gets these two little pockets right here. And then you have the next big one, which this one kind of Samaria, Idumea, this area is given to Herod Archelaus, right? So kind of Archelaus. And then you get this kind of number three area, this yellow area, which is Herod Antipas, right? Which is this guy here. We're going to talk about him in a second. Okay. And then you get number four up here, which is given to Philip. Okay. So they are actually called tetrarchs, right? A tetrarch would be a ruler of a fourth. So they take Herod the Great's kingdom, they divide it into fourths. Oftentimes, this Herod Antipas gets referred to as King Herod, right? So King Herod sometimes might be a sarcastic term, right? Because, you know, he thought of himself as a king. He's not. He's a ruler of a fourth, right? And so sometimes it might be like a sarcastic or slanderous term in the Bible as the Bible authors are writing it down like, oh yeah, King Herod, right? Ha ha ha, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Sometimes it would be just a common address. Like maybe it's just like, hey, this is just kind of commonly what we just called him King Herod. He wasn't really a king, but that's just kind of... But Herod wants to be, a great ruler, a great king, a great leader like his father, right? Part of the drama with King Herod, or this Herod Antipas, who again kind of rules this area right here, part of the drama here is that as he aspires, again, to this kingship, right? As he wants to be this king. Now, little parentheses in the middle. Let's consider this group, and we encounter this group a couple times in the Bible, the Herodians, right? A group like a sect within Judaism, a group within the Jewish kind of nation, they're compromisers. They think the best way to usher in the kingdom of God is compromise, is concession, is kind of supporting the Roman powers and waiting for God to act. They're real practical, right? They understand that opposing the Roman powers is just suicide, right? So like the zealots are kind of ready to fight and they're ready to sharpen their swords. So they're like, that's just a suicide mission. We're not doing that. We can compromise. We can concede. We can support. When Yahweh acts, he will act and we'll just be there patiently waiting, right? So part of the narrative as this guy aspires to kingship, right? And he's kind of building power with different power groups and trying to get everybody on his side and doing all these things is chapter five is the narrative of Herod killing John the Baptist. You guys remember this passage, right? Herod kills John the Baptist. Why does he kill John the Baptist? Because John the Baptist is criticizing Herod Antipas taking his brother Philip's wife, right? He's basically snatching wives away from family members. And again, this breaks the Jewish laws found in Leviticus. So it's this real kind of weird, he wants to be this king, he wants this Jewish support, but he kind of does his own things with the rules and the laws. He's just taking people's wives. John the Baptist is the one that says, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife, right? Herodias nurses a grudge against him and wants to kill him. She finally gets that. Remember the opportunity that the daughter dances? They give that, you know, what do you want? Ask for anything you want. I'll give you up to half the kingdom. Oh, I want the head of John the Baptist. So she gets the head of John the Baptist. John the Baptist is killed. So one of the things that we're kind of finding here is again, this our key player here, this guy, Herod Antipas, right, is gonna kind of show his face again in this chapter, but in a very subtle way, in a very kind of hidden way. So if you got a Bible, we're going to go to Mark chapter 10. We've made it to chapter 10. Page 707, let's read this in the round.
Jesus then left that place and went into the region of Judea and across the Jordan. Again, crowds of people came to him, and as was his custom, he taught them. Some Pharisees came and tested him by asking, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? What did Moses command you? He replied.
They said Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. It was because your hearts were hard that Moses wrote you this law, Jesus replied. But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife.
And the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together...
Wait, Joel, hold on. Molly, you read that last, or Ronnie, you read that last one?
Oh, therefore, what God has joined together, let no man celebrate.
Let no man celebrate. Thus saith the Lord. When they were in... I'll tell you a story about that in a little bit. You got to wait for that story. When they were in the house again, the disciples asked Jesus about that. He answered, anyone who divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another man, she commits adultery. So one of the things that we find out real quick here, it's a bit strange at the very beginning, verse 1, right? Mark is a very fast-moving gospel. Suddenly, immediately, you know, Jesus doing this. But Mark says, okay, let's slow down a little bit. I want to tell you where Jesus is, right? So he gives us like his GPS coordinates of where Jesus is, which is interesting because Jesus is, here, look at this giant pushpin clip art situation that I did here. He's here, okay? He's here in Herod Antipas' territory. He's crossed over the Jordan. He's in this kind of region of Judea here. He's right here. And again, he's in, so to speak, the jurisdiction of King Herod, who just a little bit ago executed his cousin for condemning his wife-snatching actions, right? Jesus travels across the Jordan. He's into Judea, right? People are asking him, he's teaching the people, right? And again, one of the things that I hadn't known this, but it makes perfect sense. Think about all the things the Pharisees could have asked him, right? Hey, Jesus, you know, tell us when the kingdom of God will come. Hey, Jesus, who is forgiven in the kingdom of God? Hey, Jesus, what about the, you know, like all the questions they could have asked him, they ask him what question? What's the question they ask him in this passage? Can I get divorced? What's your, Jesus, how do you feel about divorce?
Well,
what's your feelings on divorce, right? Now, again, it's not a random question that they're asking here, right? One of the things that the Pharisees are trying to do, the Pharisees came and tested him. They're trying to trap him, right? One of the things that they're trying to do here is, can they get Herod to do their dirty work, right? Herod had just killed John the Baptist for criticizing marriage relationships between him and his brother Philip and his wife and all those sorts of things. Hey, if we can trap Jesus in Herod's jurisdiction for criticizing marital arrangements of Herod and Herodias, he'll take care of him just the way he took care of John the Baptist, right? So, if it's interesting too, a couple little other scriptural tie-ins. If you go back to chapter 3, right, Jesus does a miracle. Chapter 3, he heals a man with a shriveled hand, right? Shriveled hand, and he makes him stand up in front of everybody, does it on the Sabbath. Immediately after the killing, the Pharisees went out with the 3:6. The Pharisees went out with the Herodians and began to plot with them on how they are going to kill Jesus. Chapter 3, verse 6. The Pharisees and the Herodians, remember the Herodians are the compromisers, they're the ones on Herod's side, right? They are the ones who are like saying, hey, let's ask him this question about marital relationships, about divorce, right here. It's interesting too, in this passage, when does Jesus actually give his real answer? Where is he when he gives his real answer? Somebody look in verse 10.
The house?
He's in a house, right? So in verse 1, Jesus leaves that place, goes into the region of Judea, across the Jordan, and you got crowds of people around him, right? And amongst the crowds of people, the Pharisees go to trap him. Now, he's going to give an answer, but then when he gets in the house with his disciples is when he gives his real answer, right? So what the Pharisees, I'm sure you guys have been enjoying all of this time, this season of political, and you're getting all these, I brought two of these political attack ads, right? We get these in the mail. I'm not promoting whoever this is. Janet Nguyen stands with radical Democrats, right? This one is, our border is in crisis. You know, these attack ads where it's just like, man, this person is going to ruin, the borders are going to be completely open. She's, you know, defunding ICE and all this sort of stuff, you know. This is exactly, like, it's a political attack ad is what the Pharisees, this is like the original one, right? What the Pharisees are doing to Jesus, right? They are asking him this specific question while he's in this specific region to try and trap him to see if Herod will do the dirty work for them that they don't really have the jurisdiction, the power to do. The other piece on this too, is there's a whole nother kind of backstory to this, okay? So let me show you that there's like this political narrative. There's also like a theological narrative based on Deuteronomy 24:1, and I'm going to get to that in a second. If you were to read this story in the book of Matthew, the Pharisees come and ask Jesus about marriage and divorce, and the Pharisees' specific question here in Matthew is like this. It says this. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason, right? Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? And the Pharisees want Jesus to say what in this moment?
That it's all right.
Huh?
That it's all right.
No, that's not.
That it's not all right, right? You couldn't, like, the Pharisees, like, hey, Jesus, can you divorce your wife for any reason? And Jesus is like, no, you can't do that. Like, we're not doing that thing, right? They want him to say no, which then what's going to happen is this is going to contradict their law, the Jewish law in Deuteronomy 24. Now, let's look at this for a second. We're going to expand this idea a little bit, okay? Here's Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4, okay? This was the Jewish law on marriage and divorce. If a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him because he finds something indecent about her and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her and sends her from his house, and if after she leaves his house, she becomes the wife of another man, and her, this is a long sentence, by the way, and her second husband dislikes her and writes her a certificate of divorce, comma, gives it to her and sends her from his house, or if he dies, then her first husband, still going, who divorced her, is not allowed to marry her again after she has been defiled. Isn't that such a nice way to say it? That would be detestable in the eyes of the Lord. Do not bring sin upon the land the Lord your God has given to you as an inheritance. Right? So, this is kind of the passage that they would use on divorce. Right? Now, in Jesus' day, again, they're asking him this question about marriage and divorce. There's this political kind of attack ad nature to it. There's this theological question. The two prominent rabbis in and around Jesus' day and time, maybe I've mentioned them before, Rabbi Hillel, Rabbi Shammai, these two very prominent rabbis, they looked at this verse and they interpreted it in different ways. Okay? Here's how Hillel emphasized it. Hillel emphasized it here. If a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him, right? If my wife or woman, whatever, if you become displeasing to me, right? I write you a certificate of divorce and I send you away, right? That's how he put the emphasis there towards the beginning of that first part, right? Now, Rabbi Shammai puts the emphasis here on the second part. He talks about something indecent about her. Now, this phrase, something indecent, if you go and look specifically more at the original language, it's really referring to an act of adultery. The indecency talks about nakedness, talks about those sorts of things. Rabbi Shammai puts the emphasis here on the indecency, right? This kind of act of adultery. So you have this very kind of back and forth conversation that's happening between Shammai and Hillel. You have them asking again, it's just like, Jesus, who do you side with here? Can I do it for any and every reason, right? Can I just write a certificate of divorce and send him away? And they want Jesus to say, no, you can't do that, right? And then say, no, Jesus, I can write a divorce and send her away. That's the law, right? And what Jesus does in this time is he does something. I mean, when Jesus teaches and when Jesus is asked questions, it's brilliant. He just skips over this whole argument and he goes back to the original intent. Genesis, right? He says, you want to go back and you want to look at laws. He's like, okay, let's go all the way back, right? God bringing men and women together who are bound for life. I think this metaphor might work. Imagine arguing about what is the proper speed limit. Is it 55 miles an hour or is it 65 miles an hour, right? And you get into this big argument and then somebody says, you're missing the point. The point of speed limits are what? Safety, right? We want roads that are operated safely, right? And this is kind of what Jesus is like, hey, Jesus, which is it? Can I do it for any and every reason? Is it about something indecent, right? All those sorts of things. And Jesus is like, no, you're missing the point of when God set up marriage. It was about unity, bringing people together. So we have the original intent, which Jesus goes all the way back to Genesis, right? But Deuteronomy 24 is something really unique. This passage in Deuteronomy, which God speaks of, some of the commentators called it the second best reality. Right, it brought order, protection, and actually moved humanity forward. Some people called Genesis Plan A and Deuteronomy Plan B, and it's just like okay, like God gave us both, right? Like there's the original intent that God had. There's Plan B, this fallen accommodation, and actually, this whole passage in Deuteronomy 24 is moving humanity forward. Let me show you how.
What do you need?
Nothing.
Oh, someone.
Oh. Someone trying to steal my coffee machine out there? What's going on? Good?
No, somebody's walking out there. No.
Okay. Javier's protecting the door. I trust Javier. Take care of business over there. So again, this Deuteronomy passage is doing a couple things. Number one, it's kind of weird to think about this, but it's protecting women, right? It's protecting women. Think about this. Women were to be given a legal document which liberated them from a previous marriage and a freedom to find another spouse. There was no lying. There was no falsification. There were no games. A man couldn't change his mind or just call the woman a liar and create some sort of feud based, right? So if a woman, you know, if a man says, hey, I want to divorce you, the guy can't come back and say like, well, you know, I didn't really mean that, or you're a liar, I never said that, or, you know, she goes and marries another person and there's all of a sudden a feud started. This was a document of protection for women and for liberation. And there was nothing like this in the ancient Near East at the time. This was a giant step forward for women, right? Even though like in our standards, it might be like, man, that seems pretty regressive. In their standards, this was a giant leap forward. Jesus also does something here too, is that he places the guilt on men, right? What does he say in Mark 10? He says, it's because your hearts were hard that God gave you this law. Because it was, you're harsh and you were cruel and you were stubborn. And maybe in some ways, this fallen accommodation, this Deuteronomy 24, was a step forward. Again, was actually preventing a woman from further harsh treatment or cruelty, right? And then the last thing that Deuteronomy 24 is doing here is that the whole idea behind this passage, if you really go back to this passage, it's really about like remarriage, right? It's not about necessarily marriage. It's about like how, again, in this fallen accommodation where people don't stay, again, they had a problem with divorce in Jesus's day. They had a problem with divorce in Moses's day, right? How does humanity, how does God bring his people together for divorce in this time? And again, this passage is giving instructions on remarriage and prohibiting wife swapping, right? Like, guys, you can't just get rid of a woman because you're upset at her one day and then, you know, find out that the grass really isn't greener on the other side. Take her back because you just want to, you know. It's really a you know, again, and there's the original intent, and then it's really a law again to how does one remarry, how does that happen in culture? And then look, we're not going to do this wife swapping thing because, you know, marriages are tough. They require work. They aren't perfect. They demand sacrifices. They will humble you. They will break you. Last week, Dale Bruner's quote on, we were talking about extreme measures last week, right? When Jesus tells us to gouge out our eye and cut off our hand and chop off our foot and all those sorts of things. And Bruner had this quote. And let me just, this quote immediately just resurfaced. But look, right? I put some things in brackets. The repentant, discipled, and we'll just say this week, it's married life, right? Often hurts. We must say this to our pleasure-seeking church, which is ourselves, right? Again, repentant married life often hurts. We must say this to ourselves more often. But discipled or married hurting is only for a while. Its long-term reward is life. Genuine discipleship, married relationships do, right, hurt. But consider the rewards, right? Again, just kind of taking that quote from Bruner. And just, you know, kind of recycling it a little bit with again, just using this idea of marriage. Marriage is tough, right? It requires work. And sometimes we need to say that to ourselves more often. Okay, here's, guys, ready for this one? This is a big moment for us. I'm excited about this. I had thought about like, okay, what do we do with this passage? How do we, like, do I give marriage advice, like practical divorce prevention tips, maybe date ideas for couples, like, hey, here's 10 hot dates you can go on, like all this sort of stuff. You know, Jesus gives us this language in chapter 10 and verse 6, at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one. Here's a story I'm going to tell you about. When Molly and Ronnie got married, right, and I was doing their wedding ceremony, and I'm all just like, you know, everything's going good. And I get to, like, the end, and I say, here's what I say at the very end of their wedding. Who is there? You, obviously, you guys were there. You guys are there? Yeah, remember this? I say, you know, at this point, what God has joined together, let no man, instead of separate, I said celebrate. Like, God has joined together, let no man celebrate. And then I was like, I'm like, you know, it was just like, oh, wait a second, wait. Okay, separate, you know. So anyway, this language that Jesus uses here, and I think I might have told you guys this. When I memorized the book of Mark, I actually memorized the word celebrate here instead of separate, just as my own internal personal joke. So at the beginning of God creation, this is just famous, classic wedding vow language. Does anybody remember having this read at your wedding? Anybody remember this? Yeah, okay, the classic. Here's what we're going to do now. I'm a little nervous about this, but I think we can do this together. We are going to do this morning, we are going to do mini vow renewal ceremonies. Every single couple in this room, we are going to do mini. I've married you guys. I've married at least three couples, and we are going to do a mini vow renewal ceremony. And what I'm going to do is we're going to do it one by one, right? I'm going to invite you up. It's going to be real simple. I'm going to invite you up here to our altar, okay? I got beautiful flowers here I'm going to have the ladies hold. And the woman is going to say these four lines, kind of based off this passage in Mark 6 or Mark 10. God created me to find you. I love you. And I've left everything and everyone behind, and I'm all yours. For this reason, a man's going to leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. And today, again, I'm choosing you to be by your side, to be united despite my weaknesses, despite my fallings, right? No longer two, we're one. And then this last piece, therefore, God has joined together, let no one separate. God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby. I should have put something like, and let's celebrate or something along those lines, okay? Woman's going to say that. Husband's going to say that. We don't got to get into the whole kissing thing. That kind of could get a little awkward this morning. But we'll do that this morning. Every couple. Now, we're going to need to make it a little bit lighter in here so we don't get this, like, serious, right? Julie, are you taking the kids out?
No, I'm saying it's too wet.
Oh, bring them inside. Well, we're going to do something here with all the kids, too. Because we need mini ring bearers. We need flower girls. We need the whole situation. So bring all those little kids in here.
We got the rat.
The church mouse.
I'm having a big
church
right now.
All right, now. Come on, kids. I want you to sit down on the floor. We're going to practice some wedding ceremony.
You got to make an aisle, though.
What?
Make sure that you You got to leave an aisle.
Okay. I'm
still
right now.
Yeah, we're gonna let you do that up here.
I think Alice and Eli should be the ones.
Yeah, this should be the bride and the groom.
No, we're not talking about. We're talking about people that are actually married.
What's up, buddy?
Oh. All right, now. Where's my extroverts? Who's gonna go first? My extroverts.
My mom.
You guys want to come up?
Yeah, we'll be first.
Come on up here. You guys are going to be the first.
Go, Wendy and Brian.
That's why I was laughing, because our dog's here when she comes, and I was all.
I was going to ask you to start.
I would have felt left out if she wasn't here.
Don't worry. I got something for everybody this morning. Okay, come stand right here in front of me. The pastor.
Thank you. I'm on the right.
He's on the right, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, there you go. Face me. Or do you want to face one another? We're gonna go.
Whatever you want to see.
Okay. Look, this is everybody take notes how this happens right here. Okay, there we go. Brian, you're gonna start us. Right here.
Oh, okay.
Say, God created me to find you and love you.
God created me to find you and love you.
I have left everything and everyone behind, and I'm all yours.
I have left everything and everyone behind, and I'm all yours.
Step back, ladies.
Today, once again, I'm choosing to be by your side, united together, despite my weaknesses and
failings.
God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby.
God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby.
Okay, I'll turn around so she can do too. Somewhere. Oh, right. You know what I'm saying? Let's just switch. Do like, oh. Ready? All right, now your turn, Wendy. You ready?
Okay.
God has created me to find you and love you.
God has created me to find you and love you.
I've left everything and everyone behind, and I'm all yours.
I've left everything and everyone behind, and I'm all yours.
Today, once again, I'm choosing to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses and failings.
Today, once again, I am choosing to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses and failings.
God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby.
God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby.
Once more, I now pronounce you man and wife. And for the second time, Mr. and Mrs. Brian.
No, Vincent.
Mr. and Mrs. Trevilia. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
Y'all ready for this?
There you go. That's one down. Who's next? Let's go.
Mom! I'll be the
You want to do it? Oh, mom and dad, yes. Oh, Eric comes up. Eric comes up. Eric comes up.
Hey. Oh, Eric and Dietra.
Come on, Eric and Dietra.
What?
Go, go ahead, G.
Yeah, for the last time.
Come here. Father's for me, right?
Father's for you.
You're me too.
Okay. You ready? You gonna go first? God created me to find you and love you.
God created me to find you and love you.
I have left everything and everyone behind. I'm all yours.
I have left everything and everyone behind.
Today, once again, I'm choosing to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses and failings.
Today, once again, I'm choosing to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses.
God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby. God has created me to find you and love you.
No.
God created me to find you and love you.
I have left everything and everyone behind, and I'm on yours. Today, once again, I'm choosing to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses and failings.
Today, once again, always I choose to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses and failings.
God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby. Once more, I now pronounce you man and wife for the second time, Mr. and Mrs. Gunn. Woo!
Okay, now mom and dad.
All right, here we go.
Mom, go up.
No, here.
I'm free.
You gonna do the faster?
Yeah.
James.
Here, handsome boy.
Oh.
Hey,
James is like
one. Who's nine foot?
God created me to find you and love you. I have everything and everyone behind, and I am all yours. Today, once again, I am choosing to be by your side, united together despite my weaknesses and failings. God has brought us together, and let's keep it together, baby.
God created me to find you and love you. I have left everything and everyone behind and all yours. Today, once again, I'm choosing to be by your side. Despite united together, despite my weaknesses and failings. God has brought us together. Let's keep it together, baby. Yeah,
what do you say?
Now
we're going
to do men and wife. For the second time, Mr. and Mrs. Wally.
All right, who's next?
Brian and Joy.
Oh, Brian and Joy.
Does any other kid want to be the pastor? Josie, you want to try the pastor? Come on up here. Josie's going to be Brian and Joy's pastor.
Yeah, Josie, I'll help you. I'll help you. Can I go next?
You can be next.
Yay!
James is the ring bearer.
Wait, no, it's all of us. All the kids.
Whichever way. Whichever way.
All the kids.
Okay, you guys want to do it?
Yeah.
And how are you? Okay, here you go. So you can do the pastor.
I'm
gonna
go.
Despite my
Baby. And that kind of has a dual meaning in that as well, too, right?
Switch?
Yep.
Switch sides? Okay.
Who's next? Come on, ring bearer, pull it together.